And we're going to begin our World Watchers program and take it from there. This is program number 660, July the 30th, 1984. This time last year, I was into some very complicated diagrams and charts for the broadcast, number 608. The relationship, I was trying to discuss the relationship of Fritz Kramer, who I speak about all the time, Anton Fritz Kramer, the plans officer of the Pentagon, the mentor behind Henry Kissinger, and the relationship of Kramer and Kissinger to Army intelligence and to the people involved in the cover-up of the murder of John Kennedy, if not the planning of the murder of John Kennedy, John McCloy, Alan Dulles, Joseph Ball, Gerald Ford, and all the links of all these people to Klaus Barbie, who had been arrested and sent to France to trial, who hasn't gone on trial yet. And also the complicated diagram. If you don't have this broadcast and you've picked up programs in the past year and you're not familiar with the programs I did previously, these tapes are available and you really should get these diagrams, this one and a few of the others. They're terribly important because I was trying to explain the relationship of Gerald Ford, Henry Kissinger, Marvin Davis, Mark Rich, and the board of 20th Century Fox to John DeLorean and their links to Klaus Barbie, to the Bolivian cocaine death squads and the Bolivian government and the traffic of cocaine, to the Hollywood studios and to the people behind the murder of John Kennedy. Now that's a lot to swallow if you don't spend another hour on this subject, but that's what I was talking about last year, the Hollywood connections of this particular studio, the relationship of Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford, of course, on the board of 20th Century Fox, the allegations of the cocaine of DeLorean coming from Klaus Barbie, and the interrelationship of Nazis and drugs and Hollywood studios. As I say, I try to detail and draw those diagrams, the office of William Rogers, the gentleman who is in the shared law office with William Casey, the links to the drug connections going down to Resorts International, up to Hollywood, the 20th Century Fox studio, and members of the Warren Commission, Earl Warren, and the whole group tied together in the past in 1963, earlier in 1943 to 45, 45 when the war was over with Henry Kissinger with Klaus Barbie, then Barbie's role in Bolivia in the 70s when Nixon came into office and Kennedy, both Kennedys were dead and Nixon now had the throne. That's what I was talking about a year ago this evening. Now, in the news this week were three items that seemed to make the full circle of what I was trying to say last year. And this is the title of the circle was a book that describing espionage that came out last year. And I love the title because the news events do seem to take these full circles. And this is one of these circles. In the New York Times, it was just this last July the 10th, there's a story, Revolt in Bolivia Embarrasses the United States. Now, this is how the United States set up an elite force, like our special forces, a Green Beret, again, put together by the Nazis and Reinhard Gehlen, who was instrumental with the agents who helped kill and cover up John Kennedy's murder, a special forces group called the Leopards, down in Bolivia. This country is angry about the new government, the democracy, using cocaine traffic for profits. The fascists, like Klaus Barbie and Licio Gelli, or Zia in Pakistan, or the Shah of Iran, the most brutal terrorists, can use narcotics traffic for guns and more fascism. But when a government is overthrown, and the democracy uses the cocaine same traffickers for their profits, the government tries to stop the traffic. And under the guise of drug enforcement, the Americans have a special elite group and they kidnapped the president of Bolivia. You may have read about the kidnapping, President Hernan Siles Zuazo, Z-U-A-Z-O. The United States government kidnapped him at their special forces. Then when they asked the Bolivian army to come in and make the coup de grace and get rid of the president of Bolivia, the army refused to back up the American team. And according to the New York Times, and this is interesting because only the New York Times and the Washington Times, the Reverend Moon paper, carried the story. I didn't see it in any of the other papers that I have or get clippings from. The United States had a $5 million program down there, and then they added $58 million for the United States, a five-year program through the Agency for International Development, and we have this tremendous account. And the Americans actually kidnapped the president of Bolivia. I wondered when he was kidnapped why he wasn't killed. But when he recognized the American team and his army wouldn't support the Americans, the story in the New York Times was the revolt in Bolivia embarrasses the USA. Well, ever since Klaus Barbie has been out of Bolivia, the fascists and those that had the death squads do, in fact, still stay there. Some fled. And they would like to, again, reap in this $800 million a year cocaine traffic, wouldn't you? But they don't want this president having the money. So the Leopards, our special elite force, was caught kidnapping the president of Bolivia. Now, the Washington Times has a story, the United States fears a leftist coup in troubled Bolivia. And it claims that once the Leopards, the special forces from the United States, kidnapped the president and were forced to withdraw, and he was released after 10 hours. The president of Bolivia has strengthened the leftist government, and they have sent the anti-communists out of their duties, relieved them of their commands. This is what happened in Spain when Licio Gelli planned a coup, and the existing government caught it. That was around February of 81, just before Reagan was shot here, and the Pope was shot in May. There was a three-way plan for coups in each of these countries that was halted just by a stroke of luck. So now, the following that one story, July 18th, the Moon paper, the Washington Times, said that the president has now sent some of those people out of the country. They have asylum in the foreign embassies, and that the government is going to cling out those people. The government is stronger because they could identify what were supposed to be anti-communists that had kidnapped the president. Now, along those lines, Bolivia, of course, is troubled. The United States is involved. They were caught red-handed and didn't have support, just as when the United States invaded Cuba at the time of the Bay of Pigs, and we thought the Cubans would rise up against Castro, and they didn't. We were caught there. Then, seeming far away, but keeping in mind my allegations a year ago of this particular case, onto the John DeLorean trial. They're now investigating, you know, the jury tampering case. And July 12th, there was a story, DeLorean jury tamper probe starts. And a fan of John DeLorean's, Mrs. Jacqueline Funkhauser, wanted to send a letter. She showed her love of John DeLorean by writing to Congressman Edwards, and he sent to various addresses, 6 or 8 or 10 addresses of the jury, I forget the amount of jury, a speech that he had in Congress and a study saying that the AB scam and the FBI investigations really border on fraudulent or frame-ups. So the Frankhausers, or the Funkhausers, whichever names, they both names were involved in this, with an address in San Francisco, made the request to the congressman to send these to particular people in Los Angeles, and he didn't know that they were jurors on the DeLorean trial. Now, the question remains, how did the Funkhausers get the addresses of the jury members? Only someone in the defense or the prosecution of the case working in the courts would know. So along comes a grand jury hearing this last week on who had the information about the jury, and they called in William Ryder. He's 39 years old, a former bodyguard to Larry Flint, and asked him about the letters that the jury got. Did he know about them? Because the former bodyguard of Larry Flynt, who Larry fired, went on to work for Gordon Novell, involved in the John Kennedy assassination. He was warned by Jim Garrison in New Orleans. I've done many broadcasts on that. And they suspect that Gordon Novell, who's a friend of John DeLorean's, was the one who supplied the Funkhausers with the addresses of the jury members. They're getting to that point in the grand jury investigation. Ryder says he doesn't know anything about the incident. He doesn't think Novell does. But Larry Flynt's alleged security chief was a friend of John DeLorean's. And you remember when John DeLorean's case was almost blown, when Larry Flynt gave NBC, or CBS rather, tapes of John DeLorean, who allegedly was being forced into the drug dealing or his family would be threatened over death threats. He was forced to meet at the hotel. Well, they tried to blow that case, and that involved Gordon Novell at the time. Now, Gordon Novell goes back to the Watergate times when Richard Nixon and Charles Colson wanted him to erase some of the White House tapes. Two, in fact, were missing. There were seven that were given to the Supreme Court out of nine that were supposed to be turned over, and, of course, the famous 18 minutes. But Colson brought in Gordon Novell to tamper with the President of the United States and his case to get him off the hook. And Gordon Novell was suggested by Bob Cutler and has a pretty good case as being the umbrella man on the curb when John Kennedy was murdered. He shows up as a friend of John DeLorean. So I don't know if this is clear enough through these few items in the paper, but I was told of the connections of John DeLorean to Klaus Barbie. There are connections of the Kissinger CIA Nixon narcotics team to Klaus Barbie and the Bolivian fascist coup and to the Central Intelligence Agency through a lot of things, including the death squads and Licio Gelli and the Otto Skorzeny network. So just this past week, a year after the other broadcast, there were items about the DeLorean case and Gordon Novell, who they think is responsible for promoting the mailing of the congressional report to the jurors in June. The trial is still going on, but how they got the addresses is what they have to pin down and find out. And their prime suspect is none other than Gordon Novell, a man that Jim Garrison wanted in New Orleans, but who was protected in Ohio, said he worked for the CIA and didn't have to be investigated. Now, last week, I talked about Henry Kissinger and the British ruling class, the circle that created Henry Kissinger, and went into detail about his connections to various people in London and his co-partner right now, Lord Peter Carrington, who's head of NATO, and their links to the Hambros Bank and Michael Sindona and the Vatican interest, and Lord Home, who was Secretary to Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, and their relationship to Adolf Hitler and the appeasement and stalling that was going on. I did a section on Henry Kissinger, and I'm going back to part two, but there is something that takes more precedence this week, and I want to get right to that subject. So we'll continue the Kissinger London Nazi connections next week, I promise, but I want to go on to some presidential appointments in an election year now that I think is going to take the most of this hour. Just one quick item that I can't pass up. It's the Ronald Reagan mug. I don't know if you've seen it. It's in the newspapers. It's $500, and it's made by Royal Dalton. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And it's to raise money for James Brady, who had his brain almost blown out. Brady's brain was blown to pieces. Luckily, he is surviving somewhat. We haven't really seen him think or function. To raise money to support James Brady, the former press secretary, an ugly mug was designed or thought up by Reagan's daughter, Maureen, you could guess. And this miserable mug that shows Reagan with a hollow head, you can buy it and fill it with jelly beans. And you buy the mug of Reagan's face, and the money goes to Brady. And the same week that that's out, John Hinckley, who shot Brady, says he wants his freedom. He's ready to get out of St. Elizabeth's Hospital. Hinckley should be paying for the James Brady Foundation instead of selling empty-headed presidential mugs. But if you figure that out, the Hinckleys are a very wealthy family. I think in an election year, the Hinckleys would like to see their son released. The close links of George Bush to the Hinckley family have been documented many times and by me on those broadcasts a long while ago. But just this week, John Hinckley is seeking his freedom to walk out on the streets. James Brady is seeking a brain, and Reagan is seeking $500 a mug, a hollow-headed mug of his face, to raise money for Brady while Hinckley can go back to the American Nazi Party in California and Chicago and wherever he met the American Nazis before he shot in Washington, D.C. Now, something is happening very seriously around the country and in Washington in particular. It seems like a summer of nominations and conventions up in San Francisco and Dallas, the Olympic Games. And while all of that is going on, some of the most important decisions that will affect our lives are being passed to the hands of people that we should understand and study. We used to talk about Tricky Dick Nixon, but Ronald Reagan outdoes Tricky Dick, and I want to get into these areas. The first is an article about the appointments that Reagan is making during the recess. It's from the Washington Post. Reagan's recess hirings elicit resentment. This was July the 11th, 1984. Reagan has filled 16 executive branch vacancies in the last week from July the 4th to the 11th when this was written. This is what the Washington Post says. He set off a controversy over the use of the recess appointments. He is circumventing the Senate's authority to confirm presidential nominees. Under Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, he has the power to fill up vacancies that happen when Senate has a recess, and they grant commissions that expire at the end of the next session. But he has expanded this to include vacancies when Congress leaves town, such as for a political convention, not the regular recess, and Reagan, since in office, has made 80 appointments, some very controversial. Several were turned down, and some kept their job until finally hearings were formed, such as Leslie Lenkowski, who served U.S. Information Agency. That was one of the appointments, and the Senate rejected his nomination. And they refer to John Vandewater, who served 16 months as chairman of the Labor Relations Board. And it was more than a year before the formal nomination died in the committee. He got to serve a year, Lenkowski 6 months. Now, last week, according to the Washington Post, there were some important, they named a few of the appointments that were made while the conventions on the 4th of July weekend was going on. They mentioned Martha Seeger, who was put on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, and I'll do a lot about her. Carol Dawson to Consumer Safety Commission. Ladno Zech, Z-E-C-H Jr., to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They failed to say he was an admiral in the Washington Post. Robert Broadbent as Secretary of the Interior. And the important seven people to the National Council of Humanities. And we'll get to those because this is a large amount of money. And you know how I like theater and art, and to stack the art councils and that group with hand-picked, controversial right-to-lifers, far-right, bordering on the fascist element. Seven of those people were put on the National Council of Humanities during the recess period. Dodie Truman Livingston, chief of the Children's Bureau. Now, since Reagan took office, the Legal Services Corporation has been run by recess appointments. When everybody was out, the board of directors were appointed during the recess appointments, and there have been accusations that Reagan stalked the board with people opposed to legal aid while you were all vacationing and your congressmen were vacationing. Now, the article mentions that Jimmy Carter had made some appointments such as this during the recess, and the moment Ronald Reagan was president, he fired all of those people and put on his own team, such as the synthetic fuel company that's been under fire and investigation. Jimmy Carter had a board there, and Reagan came in, fired all but one, and put on seven. But the point is this: if Ronald Reagan loses the election, you can reappoint these people that he's stuck, put on there. 16 last week alone, 80 controversial so far. But if he's reelected president, they stay on forever, and therefore it's important to take them one by one. Now, I'm going down some of the most important appointments that affect our lives. I won't have time in the hour this evening to do all of them. I'll do this and then update that other Kissinger story next week. But they are terribly important. And some of these that I'm going down, his recent appointments, are either recess appointments or regular appointments that are controversial. And I'll indicate with after the names what they are. Just to run their names down to tell you where I'm going, because we only have time for a few each week. Ann Burford, you all know, she's been appointed to the National Advisory Committee on Oceans and Atmosphere. Now, this is the trickiest appointment. You all know her for the Environmental Protection Agency. She was fired along with 20 other. But what Reagan is doing, I'm going to make you a guess now, is to sink totally the National Advisory Committee on Oceans and Atmosphere. By doing this, Congress will cut off the money, and then the decisions will be made by the military and put it in the hands of the people like Admiral Hayward, Admiral Moore, the top joint chiefs of staff, and into the business section for the minerals and the people who can pollute and put the radiation and so forth in the air. I think he is sacking the committee by putting her on, and then the environmentalists will say, wait a minute, let's not have Burford. And that particular National Advisory Committee on Oceans and Atmosphere will then be put into the hands of the military, and I'll detail that in a moment. The next appointment is Roy Brewer for chairman of the Federal Services Impasse Panel. That is to arbitrate labor disputes between the unions and federal agencies. He has a history going to blacklisting, the McCarthy years, the Hollywood green light or red light, whether you work or don't work, and we'll go into Brewer, a long pal of Ronald Reagan's into Reagan's early fascist beginnings. Helen Marie Taylor was put on the National Council of Humanity. She's one of those, the group on the National Council of Humanities. She's on Western Goals, a long supporter of Phyllis Schlafly. She funds Pat Robertson's religious fundamentalist program, and is part of the Eagle Forum. The moral majority will go to Helen Marie Taylor. I'll have time for her this evening. Kathleen Kilpatrick has been on the Council of Humanities. She goes by the name Kilpatrick. She's married to Mr. Andre Navrozov, Navrozov. He's the publisher of the very controversial Yale Literary Magazine. She doesn't use the name Navrozov. She uses that nice Irish Kilpatrick. William Barclay Allen, a public research syndicate. These are on the Humanities Council that he slipped in last week. James V. Shull from Georgetown University. One newspaper referred to him as a professor at Georgetown. Another, he's a reverend who teaches at the Catholic University. Josephine Cressimore from Raleigh, North Carolina. Robert Laxalt, the brother of Senator Paul Laxalt. There's four professors here that have absolutely nothing to do with humanities or art. Laxalt from the University of Nevada in Reno. William Allen, a professor of government at Claremont University, the Harvey Mudd College, and I want to do a broadcast soon on Claremont, Peter Drucker, Fritz Kramer, and Henry Kissinger. Going back to what I was talking about last week, the British Nazi connections of Henry Kissinger that include Peter Drucker. Out of Claremont is a whole nest and beehive of Edwin Meese's friends and a nucleus of the fascists right in that little geographical area. Leon Cass, a Henry Luce professor of liberal arts, who is studying the relationship of biology at the University of Chicago and its ethical and social implications of biomedical advances, particularly the right to life. These are four professors, one at Reno, Nevada, the brother of Paul Laxalt, the controversial fellow, a professor of government at Claremont, a Henry Luce professor of government at University of Chicago studying the biomedical relationships of right to life. nothing to do with arts and humanities. He passed those on. He appointed a retired Rear Admiral Lando Zech, I mentioned before, Z-E-C-H, over the furious objections of the Union of Concerned Scientists. They're trying to ease the atomic power regulations for the industry to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He has recommended retired Zech. That's one of those that has slipped in. Martha Seeger, another controversial recess appointment to the Federal Reserve Board, and she has a record of not caring about consumer interests, and I'll do more about her. You know the importance of banking matters now, and Mr. Volcker was not appointed or had any part of the commission investigating her. She was brought in by Ronald Reagan and his inner team without any part of the financial aspect of our government having the say. This was a political decision of the Justice Department and Ronald Reagan. Deborah Sekely, S-Z-E-K-E-L-Y. You notice those Polish or Russian, maybe I'm prejudiced about some of these names, coming in, Mr. Navrozov, and here's Deborah Zekely, S-Z-E-K-E-L-Y, a recess appointment. She was put in because the Heritage Foundation, and I did broadcast on their platform with Edwin Meese, with Edwin Noble and the Mellon family and so forth, the far right-wing Heritage Foundation fired the man working for the Inter-American Foundation, and Deborah is the founder of the Golden Door Fitness Center, the massage parlor where the very rich get starved and pat on the ass to get thin. Down in San Diego, she runs the Golden Door Fitness Center. She will now be chairman of the Latin American Crafts and Skills, put in by the Heritage Foundation and the far right wing down in San Diego, but an international big, big budget of millions of dollars. Stanley Sporkin has been nominated for the General Counsel of the CIA. He is the General Counsel of the CIA. He's been appointed a U.S. District Court judge, which is a lifetime appointment. And Sporkin has worked with William Casey very, very close, 7 years in the Security Exchange Commission when Casey was under fire with his links to Robert Vesco and to John Mitchell and ITT, the whole scandals of the 70s and Watergate. Sporkin was there side by side with them at the SEC. He's counsel with the CIA now. Ronald Reagan wants him a judge in the U.S. District Court. That can't be turned down. That's a lifetime appointment. The U.S. Information Agency has suggested he's nominated Ronald Reagan George Nesterczuk, N-E-S-T-E-R-C-Z-U-K, born in Germany from Asch, Bavaria, West Germany, not in the USA, to succeed the controversial Leslie Lankowski, with the blacklisting and 90 people that couldn't be heard, including even Mr. Cronkite or Coretta King. He will decide programming for the United States Information Agency, and Robert Rowland has been nominated as the head of OSHA, the Occupational and Safety Administration, to replace Thorne Auchter, A-U-C-H-T-E-R, who's under FBI investigation for having occupational safety prosecution against a particular firm in Kansas, getting them off the hook, and then becoming president of the firm. And the pollution is in Arkansas, South Dakota. So that these are the appointments. These are just 16 names of appointments, a good percentage of them done during the recess. The others, not recess appointments, but will be heard by the Senate. Now, if you have pen and pencil and you want to send copies of this broadcast and the next week's broadcast on these individuals, I'm going into the background of each one of these because this is enough to make your hair stand on end. It does with me, and it's very, very important. These people, like Ann Burford, has opinions that will affect the entire ocean, the world's ocean, your air and your rivers. What more do you want? And the earth that is polluted. Mr. Brewer will affect labor relations in this country and arbitrate. And you look what happened at the airport incident with the towers there. The 7-8 people of the National Council on Humanities will determine the kind of dramas you see, the playwrights that will be acceptable, and a way of screening out what they don't want you to see, and the money will go to the people that represent their way of thinking, and it is dramatized in that way. The Admiral with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will have to do with atomic pollution on our soil, things like Three Mile Island, the air, the plants, how much they can get away, what is safe, what we're going to do with the pollution. That's our air again. And Ms. Seeger will have to do with money and the Federal Reserve. And a lot of people know that's important. And we'll also have the Golden Door Fitness Center taking care of inter-American relationships of crafts and skill of poor people overseas who have a chance to sell in this country. We'll go back, and of course, our U.S. District Judge in Washington, a long friend and co-partner of Casey. We'll take a 1-minute break now and then go back to these appointments.